This is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167.
Hello and welcome to The Feed with Amber Mack
and Michael B. for everything new now and next.
We have you covered for what's happening in the world of tech and what's trending online.
On the show, why Facebook decided to press pause on their Instagram app for kids.
Plus the social networking app that just passed a whopping 1 billion users.
Also on the show, we tell you where Ford is building a new electric car assembly plant.
And the latest new tech from Amazon with a report from the Washington Post.
That's all coming up right here on The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B.
Trending off.
Well, Amber, what if I just said, how was your week? Blah, blah, blah. Same as normal. Blah, blah, blah. Reason why I say that is, did you see our friend Greta speaking, actually, basically roasting world leaders on climate action? I couldn't believe it. Did you see this?
Well, I've seen her definitely do that in the past. She's been very critical of many of the world leaders. And
she said blah, 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 like the actual words in reference to world leaders. I understand what she's trying to do, but could you imagine if anyone else just went blah, blah, blah? Like, I don't know. I just think it was a little bit rude, but she was doing it in reference to pretty much the French president, also President Biden, Boris Johnson, and she would use the vernacular they used in their speech and then finish it with blah, blah, blah.
Well, listen, we're talking about it on a tech show.
No.
And she's trying to save the planet. So I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt. I read something about this where she is just frustrated, as many people are, that there's a lot of talk and not a lot of action. Because I know she had also spoken about the fact that in order for us to have hope, it just can't be this mindless task of like hoping away our problems. We actually have to take action. So she's trying as hard as she can to get attention for.
She's definitely getting attention for sure. You are right. Like she would say stuff like, when I say climate change, what do you think of? I think jobs, green jobs, blah, blah, blah. Like, and she went like, so I guess it was clever, but it was just, I found it quite entertaining and interesting. A young kid, you know, in this forum when you're dealing with all of these world leaders. So interesting nonetheless. That's what I found interesting this week. What about you?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely worth talking about what she's doing. And she's not even a young kid anymore. She's an 18-year-old young woman now. So she's definitely one to watch. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how she's able to really push some of these world leaders forward. Yeah. So, I mean, listen, there's lots to talk about on this subject. I certainly have an enormous amount of compassion for her and how she's devoted her life to this. And in the big picture, Michael, if we think about what people say and being rude to world leaders, spend 5 minutes on Twitter, you'll see a lot worse.
It's so true. Oh, Twitter. All right, let's get right to it. What are people talking about?
Okay, so we have been talking so much about Facebook over the past few weeks because a lot has been happening, including a report we spoke about last week. Also, someone corrected me because I said that Mark Zuckerberg started Hot or Not, which was not the case. He started sort of a similar type of site, so wanted to clarify that. And now,
but it was still rating people on their appearance, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of same,
okay,
same. But
well,
I appreciate the sort of correction.
Okay.
Nonetheless, they have just announced that even though they had plans to move forward with an Instagram app for kids, they've decided to press pause on that because there's been so much backlash because a report has come out, which, as I mentioned, we talked about, that discussed how harmful Instagram is, especially for young girls. So, you know what? Good for them for putting a pause, although I would like to say put a stake
in. Is it, though? Yeah. Is it? Is it though? Because when you go to make something, you would have done a lot of research. You can't tell me that this problem or concern didn't come up early on in their plans when they thought, hey, let's do a kid's version of this, platform. Some alarm bells didn't go and go, oh, actually not great. Turns out we're actually harmful for them. So I don't know why. It's almost like just because there was backlash, they put a pause on it. It would be different if they came out and said, actually, we're doing a kids platform. Here are the gazillion features that will make it safer. We understand that these are all the concerns and problems with the platform. And, you know, we've heard these before and cited that, you know, people lie about their age and all this kind of stuff. So to be able to be on the platform. So it's different if they came in with these amazing measures to help protect kids and then create an environment that is safe for them to interact and communicate on. But, you know, I mean, look at the way Instagram is now. If they can't do it there, how would they be able to do it with their kids' platform?
I think you answered your own question. That's probably some of the thought pattern that went on at Facebook, where they probably realized the report came out. This was all sort of unraveling at the time, and they decided to pull the plug. You know, it's funny because I think you're right that they probably knew this a lot longer than the public knew it. But at the same time,
they forged on.
But at the same time, I think we do have to give them a little bit of space to at least, you know, put pause on this project and hope that they make the right decision, because it's not like Facebook to stop something because there was backlash, right? I mean, this is not,
users
don't listen to users. So I'm happy maybe they're starting to listen, and I'm happy for the next generation that we can finally have these honest conversations about the damage that potentially some of these platforms are doing.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Well, there's one platform that seems to be doing exceptionally well, and it's TikTok. Apparently, it's hit 1 billion monthly users. Now, that is quite a lot of users, 1 billion. And they've had their fair share of backlash when you look at the last 12 to 18 months as well.
Yeah, they really have. So it's a significant number, and they're climbing up there in terms of one of the top social platforms that exists right now. And, you know, they continue to be really the go-to platform in terms of that next generation, tweens and teens, obviously. Most of them are on TikTok. They love TikTok. And I think at the end of the day, it's interesting because, you know, as much as we complain about Facebook and Instagram and that whole ecosystem, the truth is I feel as though they have more transparency because they are a US-based company. TikTok, on the other hand, I'm not sure anyone's going to be able to do any really robust investigative reports on them based on the fact that, you know, they are not exactly the most open platform. So I don't know. Who knows what that's doing with our kids, but it's definitely one to keep an eye on.
Well, it's definitely not just kids. It's also adults as well. Because, I mean, you think about it. What is it? 7.7? I can't remember the population of the world, billion people. And if they've got already over 1 billion users, I mean, that is a lot of people around the world watching mindless short-form video, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you've been on TikTok.
it is.
Not Scorsese.
And you know what? But you know what? It can be a fun, enjoyable platform. And I think it's a little bit less visually oriented than Instagram in some ways. I know it's video, but still there's a lot of, you know, fun, clever content on there versus maybe the beauty industry on Instagram that is probably harder, especially on young girls' self-esteem. So, you know, we'll keep talking about all of these things. There are conversations that are not going away. But just quickly, Michael, we don't have too much time left in our trending up section. So wanted to mention that Ford is the motor company that has announced that they're going to spend $11.4 billion, according to TechCrunch. Oh my God, TechCrunch. That's actually a new TikTok.
That's a cool new platform.
TechCrunch. That will produce batteries as well as the next generation of electric F-Series trucks. And these two campuses will be in Tennessee and Kentucky.
Yep. So a lot of new jobs ahead for those areas as well. So it's a lot of great news. Stay with us. When we return, we tell you what's new from the Amazon event, including the latest from Ring.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167. Power Friend.
Amazon has announced a slew of devices, including a new Echo, Ring products, and even a home assistant robot named Astro. Joining us now to talk more about this is Chris Valesco, who is the technology writer for The Washington Post. Hello, Chris.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I say the technology writer. I'm sure there is more than one.
There are quite a few, as it turns out. I'm one of many, but...
All right. So we have been keeping an eye on this news from Amazon, and we really just want you to walk us through it. We know there are a number of people who have worked on this piece with you for The Washington Post. So what should people know about what Amazon just released?
Well, Amazon, as usual, has announced a plethora of new gadgets, some of which make sense and are not all that controversial, and others, as you sort of mentioned with Astro the robot, are pretty out there. So starting from the most prosaic, you have things like the Blink video doorbell, which is very much just like a cheaper version of a video doorbell that works well with Amazon's line of Blink outdoor security cameras. To my understanding, Blink users are still sort of separate from Ring users in the apps that they use. So it's a nice little bone to throw to people who have used parts of Amazon's product lineup, but not others. The Ring Alarm Pro is sort of meant squarely for the people in the other camp. It's sort of a base station that can be used to tie together multiple home security gadgets and doubles as a Wi-Fi router. The Amazon Glow is particularly interesting. It's an 8-inch sort of touchscreen, smart screen that is meant mostly for kids. So, you know, they can be talking to grandma or grandpa through that touch display, but then there's a projector on top of the device itself that projects a 19-inch touch surface down onto a mat. So as the kid is playing games, you know, designed by Mattel or Disney and other partners Amazon is yet to announce, you know, whoever's on the other end watching them play can actually interact with them with the accompanying app. And that's really just the tip of the iceberg. There's the Halo View, a sort of Fitbit lookalike, which is a follow-up to one of the most invasive pieces of Amazon tech we've ever seen, that wearable that has a microphone that tells you if you sound too tired or stressed or disappointed. There's the Echo Show 15, a smart screen that goes on your wall that kind of looks like a painting and can recognize who you are. And of course, Astro. So there really is something for everyone. That's Amazon's sort of assertion anyway. And the one thing that really struck us as we were kind of putting our story together and covering the event live is that all of these things are just, they're meant to be very sort of benign looking. They offer some level of you know, value to you, but they in many cases just sort of shrink into the background, or in Astro's case, they sort of roll away when you don't need them.
Well, yeah, so Astro might roll away when you don't need them, but he also pokes up when you may not want him. Apparently it has an extendable periscope camera.
That's true. It's one of the most unsettling things I've seen in a while. So for people who have not yet seen Astro, it basically looks like one of Amazon's Echo tablets with, you know, it's on a neck and all of that attached to a robot vacuum. And up from that neck sprouts a telescoping camera that's mostly used for security and sort of person recognition. So one of the main things Astro is designed to do if you are not around is to sort of run a patrol of your home. It hits sort of points that you predefine, so it's not going anywhere it isn't supposed to, or at least that's what Amazon says. And if it sees or hears something out of the ordinary, it will sort of raise that camera and then sort of roll over to try and investigate.
You know, it's really interesting. While you're speaking, I'm thinking to myself after reading your article that Apple gets so much attention when they have their big event, particularly the one in the fall. And yet, if we look at what Amazon has released, I'd argue that perhaps there's even more innovation at work. I don't want you to pit the two companies against each other. That's not fair, of course. But when you look at what Amazon is doing, what is their long-term game plan in this space?
From what we're able to tell, and you know, they made a nod to this early on in their presentation, they're obviously, Amazon is a company with significant holdings in technology, and what they're working towards is a world where the technology itself, the devices, the hardware, the physical things that you would normally grapple with sort of fade into the background. And a great example of that is sort of the Echo Show 15. It's that smart screen that will sort of display personalized information for you after it figures out who you are, thanks to a camera sort of tucked away in the corner. But other than that, it looks like a piece of, you know, art might be a stretch, but it looks like a thing that might otherwise normally be on your wall. And with Apple, because they're so, you know, reliant on iPhones for profit and revenue, and iPads are obviously a big sort of business driver for them as well, they have to take a more sort of active, almost in your face approach, like buy this thing that you will carry with you all of the time. And at least for now, it seems like Amazon is approaching things with the intent of removing some of those very specific and, you know, constant device interactions in your hand.
It does sound, however, Amazon is trying to still connect every part of your life, but do it in not such an obvious way. Because as you just mentioned, with Apple, we know the majority of the time we have a smartphone in our hand and we have to use the smartphone or can use the smartphone in order to interact with a lot of devices. So would you say that that is also something Amazon is trying to focus on, to still try and connect all parts of our lives, but doing it in a way that isn't as, I guess, obtrusive?
I think that depends on what your definition of obtrusive is. Like having a robot sort of rolling around your house that does have functionality that theoretically helps you, the user, but also serves as a conduit for information back to Amazon. You know, like there are pretty distinct cases where Amazon is being in your face about it. But I think your point is very much correct. You know, like having a sort of system like Alexa that you interact with almost exclusively by voice, a very sort of like distinctly human and natural thing that we do constantly anyway, talking to people, sort of making requests of others, you know, that really seems to have helped Amazon kind of grow out its ecosystem, because you're not being asked to do things you wouldn't normally do. You just sort of engage with things the way you've always engaged with other people. And it seems like in some sort of small way, they're trying to blur the line between conversations you have with other people and conversations you might be having with your tech.
Or yourself.
Or yourself.
One last question for you, and just a quick one, because I see a lot of the big tech companies always trying to target children with new technology. We just talked about Facebook and Instagram Kids being paused. Do you think there'll come a point with some of these tech companies where they maybe are a little more careful about any tech that they build for kids, and just are cautious about going down that path? Because it seems we're getting more educated and aware of the consequences of tech and children.
I think, well, I should say, I hope that's true. I hope these companies sort of take a step back and realize that, you know, inundating children, especially very young ones, with screens and voice assistants, you know, that comes with a cost. And I don't think the long-term sort of benefits or detractors that come with that vision have really fully been worked out yet. But I am also afraid that, you know, it'll take something drastic and bad for companies to sort of realize maybe we should stop focusing on kids so much. Obviously, there's a lot of conversation around, you know, Facebook and Instagram, for example. They're sort of pulling back their plans to do like an Instagram for kids out of concerns that they might not be getting this right, or the approach isn't quite there yet. So broadly speaking, I think companies are very cautious with how they approach children, but I don't think there is such a thing as too much caution. And it remains to be seen whether they sort of develop the conscience needed to sort of back things off, as I think they should.
Absolutely. All right. Well, listen, there, as we mentioned, there's more than one tech writer at the Washington Post, but for now, Chris is the tech writer, and you should follow him on Twitter at Chris Velasco. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. This was a blast.
Up next, a new calendar app from Yahoo that could add some sunshine to your day.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Aptastic.
Welcome back to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. It's time now to take a look at some new and trending apps. Michael, I don't know why I'm laughing, except that when the intro said Aptastic, I was like, who thought of this name? And I'm thinking, Michael, it was you, wasn't it?
Aptastic. You know what? Have an Aptastic day. There's so many to choose from. Speaking of, here's one that'll bring bright and sunny sunshine.
Yeah. So according to TechCrunch, or TickCrunch, as we like to call it, or Tech Talk, whatever you want to call it, Yahoo has built a new calendar app called Day, with the co-founder of Sunrise, who was consulting on the app. So this is an online calendar app, and basically, it's looks pretty slick in terms of what I'm able to see. It's in early access, so you actually have to put in your email address and then get access to it. This is something that many software companies have done over the years, which makes it seem really exclusive. But there's a couple of screenshots that I think look kind of interesting. I will say that it's interesting to see that Yahoo is kind of still in the game. I mean, that was the first thing that surprised me from this article, is that you don't hear much about Yahoo anymore. So I hope this is you know, one of many new things that they're coming together to launch. And, you know, maybe it's Yahoo 2.0.
Well, and it's interesting that they're moving it into a standalone app. And I do think that we are seeing more and more of these standalone kind of apps occurring rather than just having these features built out within some of these platforms. So it does make sense. Hopefully it's a lot more richer, because I do find some apps like this, they're too basic and they don't really add any that much more value or make things easier for me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's almost like with the calendar app, there's a lot of good calendar apps, and I don't think they need to be overly complex. So it'll be fun to see what they're able to build out. I mean, the most important thing with calendar apps is integration with other services, right?
You know, yes.
If someone's on Microsoft Teams and they're sending me an invite, I need to make sure that it works with my Google Calendar, or in this case, the calendar that they're building called the Day app. So integration is more and more an issue, almost even more so than the actual design itself.
Yeah, so let's. This next app is actually pretty interesting, especially, again, we've talked a lot about it on the show, working from home or the change in the way we will work in the future as a result of the pandemic. So there's this new app from Lounge. So it's the Lounge app. It's reimagining work for the fully remote era. And so what they're doing is, obviously, we're used to apps where you get a profile and you kind of have a photo and a short bio, and it's basically about it to connect people and you kind of chat and what have you. But what these guys are trying to do is they're aiming to kind of enhance that communication between everybody. And they're really focused on encompassing everything that's involved in the workday. So in regards to taking into account the time zones that people are working in, weather, the location, the team, and how they all participate in company events, and then how they incorporate mental health. So they've added in meditation challenges. So it really is a holistic approach, as if you were in person, because everybody remembers when you were in the office, you know, there would be morning teas organized, or there would be in the boardroom some yoga or things like that. So they've taken that online and tried to build out that entire experience, so you can still have those events and that connection with people throughout the different things that you would do during a workday, but doing it online and remotely.
Yeah, that's very cool. I think there's going to be lots of cool innovation happening in this area. I mean, with remote work, because certainly I think we can all agree that right now working remotely isn't really working for a lot of people in terms of the technology and, you know, the constant time on video. And like now almost all of my calls are video calls for some reason when they don't really have to be. And I feel this pressure to turn my camera on. And if I don't, I'm hiding something. I mean, this is not a good way to start a business relationship with people. So I think it's going to be cool to see the tools that launch that allow us to basically work effectively in a remote and virtual way, which is definitely here to stay, but do so without the risk of deteriorating relationships as well as your health. I mean, those things I think are just so critical right now. So we have a lot of stuff to figure out, I think, in the months to come, as remote work continues to be an incredible thing for many people, but also comes with its own challenges as well.
It certainly does. And I do, you know, encourage everyone to check out this app from Lounge, just because just the visualization that they have of each of the virtual desks, as I said, and then that's the other differentiation as well. So just like a company org chart, these guys present it in group by teams, projects, and even hobbies or interests with virtual desks. And then those virtual desks have been personalized, as I said, with each person's time zone and the weather that they're in, and including little windows that let you see if it's night or day. So it kind of gives you that sense of exactly if you were to see them across from you in the hallway, what exactly that would look like. So really trying to recreate that in-person experience in a very beautiful visual way.
Very cool. Okay. So speaking about beautiful and visual things, I know that this app, Michael, isn't just for travel. It's all about points. The app is called the Points Guy app. And the idea is that it will basically allow you to take all your points and your miles and earn rewards faster, as it says, track progress towards those dream trips and maximize your spending. So it's not just about flights. It can be about car rentals, all of those different points that we collect on a regular basis. And it's kind of cool because it lets you basically keep better track of the points that you're earning on credit cards, loyalty points with hotels, those type of things within a points wallet, which I think is something that a lot of people will love because it's kind of cumbersome to do so as it exists right now.
It certainly is. And what's really neat about this one is it can actually help suggest how you can improve your spending habits to actually get closer to those things you want to purchase. So if you've got a bucket list, for example, you know, it gives you insights into how better manage what you're spending and how you're doing it, but then also managing those points to be able to ensure that you can use them to the fullest of the ability to get that adventure as well. Because again, when I go to use points, I haven't really thought of how much do I need. It's kind of last minute, or I don't really look for the best deals. I kind of like, oh, I need to do this now. Okay, I'm kind of done. So I love that this kind of does it all for you, keeps you up to date, and tries to get you the best deal as possible and get your points working for you, which I think everybody will love. I don't think I've ever met anyone who doesn't like a discount and doesn't like getting things for less.
Absolutely true. Okay, so just a quick wrap up. We talked about the Day app that's coming soon from Yahoo, the Lounge app that's reimagining work for the fully remote era, and the Points Guy app that is allowing you to unlock the world of points and miles.
And of course, if you've got any apps, gadgets, or products you think we should check out and share on the show, tweet us at Amber Mac and at AmberBancroft80. And of course, use the hashtag TheFeed. Coming up, how technology can help with burnout, depression, and anxiety.
The Feed with Amber Mac and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. In the Spotlight.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mac and Michael B. We've talked a lot about mental health on the show during the pandemic, and we've showcased also some technologies and platforms helping improve healthcare offerings to many communities. Well, our next guest is Christian Ranta. He's the CEO of Miru Health, and it's a company that's focused on improving the lives of people living with burnout, depression, and anxiety. Really appreciate you joining us, Christian, today to talk about this. Let's start with the problem itself. What is the problem you're solving, and how is Miru Health going about solving this problem?
Thanks a lot, Michael. Amber, good morning. Yeah, so Miru Health, we founded the company in 2016. I'm one of the co-founders. And, you know, the problem we wanted to solve is basically twofold. There's a problem with access to mental health services. So that's kind of a huge problem, a global problem. There's not enough providers. There's challenges for people to find the right provider, get to the right level of care and the right type of care. But then there's also another problem, which is about the effectiveness of the care we provide today in mental health care. So, you know, my background is in diabetes and in computer science. So I used to be in medical technologies and digital health before. And then I kind of came from diabetes, where we as a society are a little bit better in treating these conditions on a population level. And then when I came to mental health care, I realized that, you know, we're not doing a great job on a population level in actually really treating these conditions in a way that people would get better and stay better. So, you know, I'm not saying that diabetes is perfect either, but mental health was even worse. So those are the two major problems that we set out to solve.
I was reading on your website that you want to empower 10 million people suffering from mental health challenges by 2027. So that's not that far away. How do we get there? How can your company help? And I also noticed you've done quite a lot of research in this space, so would love to hear about the path ahead.
Yeah, that's a good question. So, I mean, we kind of set ourselves a goal, which would be somewhat like 3x growth every year from now on. And then a goal that would be aspirational and you know, a good, so like a beacon for us. Yeah, so what's happening on our side is that we definitely like started the company initially with building a prototype and then doing research with universities like Stanford, UC Davis, and Harvard as well. So went in, really wanted to validate. And again, having the background myself from healthcare, I realized that it's going to be extremely important to make sure that whatever we build and offer, it's, you know, it's got to be validated. It's got to be properly proven to work for people, not to cause harm and so forth. So I think like one of our biggest sort of like leverage points now is that we've actually done this really high quality research and shown that the offering we've built, which is kind of a, you know, it's an online provider. So we have providers like therapists and psychiatrists, but also something we call a digital therapeutic, which is an app based and a wearable device, kind of a, you know, a journey for people or a program, as we call it. And you know, we've now validated these this combination, this unique combination in numerous clinical trials and shown that it works tremendously well, even actually a lot better than the standard of care today. So we're, you know, getting started there. So exciting.
How do you go about approaching a patient to get them on board with, you know, online therapy, as opposed to what most people are familiar with, which is the in-person therapy? And then now that, as you mentioned, bringing in different types of devices and different ways of, you know, tracking their progress and, you know, incorporating devices into part of their therapy, how do you go about, you know, educating them and getting them to trust and be on board with that kind of, you know, different way of tackling how to get better?
Yeah, important question as well. So we work with health insurance companies in the United States, and then also with you know, large self-insured or large employers that are offering you know, these services, also the mental service for their members. And basically, how we reach out to people. So how do people find us? We are, you know, we're available through like Cigna in the United States, as an example, and other insurance companies as well, and through their own portals and their own systems where people can seek for care, for mental health care resources, whatever else. You know, we appear there, so people can find us, you know, that way. But then we also do a lot of like more proactive campaigns where we send out emails or even postcards to people's homes, and, you know, just to reach out to people who are covered by their employer or by the health insurance company, so that people can come to a sort of like a landing page or a mental health web page where they will then learn more about the offering. And the idea there is that it's, you know, it's a different type of an offering, but we still have, you know, human therapists and human care coordinators and psychiatrists that are doing televideo and remote care. And then there's the digital part of it. So it's more like a kind of like a masterclass meets Headspace meditation app, and, you know, roughly like that. So there's kind of like lessons and video lessons, and then there's also different practices and guided meditations and, or, you know, journaling or cognitive behavioral therapy related practices as well. So it's kind of like a digital plus remote human experience. And we explain that for people, and you know, we're seeing that people are, you know, more and more interested. So consumer behavior is also changing us as we go here.
As you're talking, I was thinking about an article that I read recently where the federal government in Sweden was actually providing a number of different apps to help their citizens in terms of mental health, you know, even dealing with things like migraines and all of these issues that sometimes go unnoticed. What role do you think the governments across the world can play? And is it something where you think they should start to think more seriously about health services in the context of just beyond physical health?
Yeah. So, you know, myself being originally from Finland, which is close to Sweden, and just recently actually visited Sweden. Yes, it's true. Like, they have some really interesting services. There's also a lot of private providers that are reimbursed by the governmental healthcare system. So there's kind of like a, you know, like a Medicare type of a system, universal healthcare system in Sweden and in Finland as well, in the Nordic countries, which then typically offers reimbursed, like reimburses private sector services for citizens, but then also offers sometimes like more inbuilt services. And yeah, I think that's definitely a good idea. I mean, in many ways, mental health care is very, you know, it's very similar to physical health care. And if we offer public health care in a physical form, why wouldn't we offer you know, mental health care also as public health care? But I'm, you know, again, I think that there's a place for the public sector healthcare offerings, and there's a place for also private sector healthcare offerings. So I think, you know, if they coexist, that's, in my opinion, you know, can be the best way forward.
Well, listen, thank you so much for joining us, and we hope people check out your company online. Thanks for being here, and thanks for all the work that you're doing to help with the growing issue of mental health around the world.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Up next, what you need to know about artificial intelligence in your toothbrush.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Techstar.
Welcome back to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Artificial intelligence is touching every part of our daily lives and making many tasks simpler without us ever being aware that it's being used at all. To share some of the key advancements in this space and how the technology is helping in areas such as dental health and communications, we are joined by Nick Romano, CEO of DeepLight. Hello, Nick.
Hello, how are you?
I am doing great. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
This is a broad topic. There's a lot we can talk about, but let's start with DeepLight. What do you guys do, just for people who have not heard of the company before?
Well, sure. So we're based in Montreal and Toronto. So we're a Canadian company, and we're focused on what we call AI for everyday life, which basically means the technology that we've created is designed to take, you know, these complex algorithms that, you know, require a tremendous amount of compute power and whatnot. And we can get them into devices that we use every single day. So kind of to your point in the intro, we're about making that happen in everyday devices.
And so looking at those everyday devices, can you give us some practical examples for those people listening that don't necessarily think, oh, that activity I'm doing with this particular device has artificial intelligence in it? Those examples that people just really aren't quite aware of.
Yeah, I mean, it really is starting to touch a lot of the things that we use every day. So for, you know, for example, you know, a lot of people may be familiar with robotic vacuum cleaners. You know, park themselves, and then, you know, whenever they're ready to go, they undock themselves from the dock, and then they move around your house. And essentially what that's all about is they're using AI to learn the pattern of your house. So when you see the robotic vacuum cleaner, say, bump into a couch, and then it changes direction and it goes a different way, it remembers that there's something in that spot of the house. So that's AI in a very practical home example. We also have you know, you mentioned the dental example. You know, so we're talking to a very large producer of electric toothbrushes, and that's exactly what they're looking to do. I mean, you can imagine an electric toothbrush. It doesn't have a tremendous amount of horsepower behind that toothbrush. It really needs to move the head. It's battery operated. So, but what they're looking to do is to have some intelligence in that device so that it can actually guide you and help improve the way you're brushing your teeth. And that, again, that's AI within that device, learning how you brush and then providing feedback on how you're doing.
I'm embarrassed to say this, but I have actually used many of those electric toothbrushes that leverage the power of AI, and it is kind of remarkable to see how well they work. And I think you're right. It's really invisible, I think, to the end user.
Right.
When we talk about some of the technology that you're working on and everyday use case scenarios, what do you think is the most exciting and to make people's lives better? Because that's one of the things we always try to focus on this show, is not just the, you know, doomsday scenarios with AI and technology, but the positive things.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really important point, because, you know, AI can be used in a lot of different ways. And, you know, really what the purpose of AI is, if we sort of distill it down to its core, requirement is that you're using algorithms to really help people make decisions. So it, essentially taking the decision-making out of the individual's hands into the AI process and helping guide the individual. So it's as simple as, hey, I'm going to help you improve your dental hygiene, or I'm going to make a better cup of coffee for you, or I'm going to stop your car to make sure that you don't actually hit the pedestrian that you didn't happen to see while you were backing out of your driveway, sort of thing.
So how harder is it to iterate or improve artificial intelligence in these scenarios? Because I can imagine it would take a lot of data and really controlling that data and getting the right algorithms. I mean, that's no mean feat.
Yeah, and that's I think you've hit the crux of the matter here. Data is the principal driver behind all of this. So, you know, for those that aren't kind of familiar with how AI works, AI in and of itself, like the algorithms themselves, they're not very smart. They're just basically, you know, algorithms that have been created. But what you need to do is you need to teach that algorithm what it is that you're trying to do. So, you know, if you're talking about dental hygiene, you need to train that model on what is good practices with dental hygiene, the movement of the brush, the coverage of the tooth, that sort of thing. So the training is a big part of enabling the entire AI process. But one of the things that DeepLite does is, you know, if you've trained your model and you've trained it for what's called accuracy, meaning it makes good decisions. But, you know, if you're trying to fit it into a very tiny chip on a toothbrush, that's not an easy feat. So what we do is we can take that model that's been trained to for dental hygiene, for example, and we can compress that model down to a very, very tiny footprint so that it can be deployed on very, very constrained hardware, not use a lot of battery power, and actually make it work in the devices that we use every day.
Well, it's just incredible to see what you're able to do. And I know we're just scraping the surface in terms of the full potential of your business and the future. For people who want to read more about DeepLite, where is the best place for them to go?
Definitely our website, www.deeplite.ai is a great place to start.
Very cool. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for your time. It was great talking to you today.
Stay with us when we come back. How to find your sweet spot with sleep.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Socially Speaking.
It's time now for Socially Speaking, and this week we are going to talk about a subject that I don't think we've talked that much about, unlike Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and all the social networks. This week we're going to talk about something a little bit different, and that is sleep. It's amazing to me to see all of these fitness trackers and apps, and even sleep technology that helps to make sure that you are getting a good night's sleep, and the devastating effects of not getting enough sleep. So I'm basing this on an article that I shared in my newsletter this week, which was on CTV, that says, find your sleep sweet spot to protect your brain as you age. And basically they talked about what they had learned about how changes in sleep are linked with early signs of Alzheimer's, depression, cardiovascular disease, so many issues when you don't sleep a lot. So now I'm going to ask you guys personal questions about your sleep. Michael, I'm not going to ask you first because I know you're a bit of a train wreck. But Aaron, how important is sleep in your life?
It is very important. And I want to say I never take it for granted, but I do. And I shouldn't take it for granted because I used to work a morning show shift. I used to wake up at 3 or 4 or 4:30 a.m. Eastern and show up to work at 5 to 5:15 Eastern and then finish my day at, 12 or 1 Eastern. And sleep was always such a struggle. And now that I work more regular hours, I should be more regular with it. And I know the difference. And anyone who's a parent knows when you get a good sleep day and a bad sleep day and just in general. And I should be better with it. I know I've talked on the show over the past few years about doing good things like putting your phone down and picking up an actual book made out of actual paper. Well, past couple of years, I haven't done that. I think I've started two books and gotten 10 pages into each of them over 24 months and then put them down. So I notice a difference. I know it's hard to think long term and think of the future. Maybe a study like this might be better if they talk about, you know, the small steps of taking care of yourself now, making it more impactful for now, because the future always looks so far away. And, you know, like we were talking about on the show earlier, we may or may not be under the boot heel of our AI tyrannical overlords by that point. Hopefully not, but
whoa, that took a turn.
Whoa, that went real dark real fast. Wait, so but sorry. The future is now, Aaron. The future is now.
No, it's later. It's later. Anyways, I was going to go off
you're
on another tangent. I won't. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you're a
definitely.
Future procrastinator. That is a good way to... Amber, what about your sleep, though? Because, I mean, we've talked about my sleep on the show many times before. I think it is a train wreck. What about yours? Because I know you started to focus more on rest and being more careful with your rest because you work so much and you have so much going on in your life and you found the importance of making sure that you're recharged.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, some people have legitimate sleep issues, Michael, and I know you're one of those people, so I don't mean to throw you under the bus with my comments.
It's a train wreck.
But I will say that it's not great. I do actually feel very, very lucky that my entire life I have been able to fall asleep within probably seconds and sleep for 7 or 8 hours. And that's, you know, that's been something that I've done since I was a kid. Now, I'm not saying I've always been perfect with that. So I've gone through periods where I think I thought at some point, this is so ridiculous. You know what? I'm glad that I'm open to always learning, because at some point I think I thought, you know what? I can actually survive on, you know, 6 hours of sleep and I'm totally fine. But when I started tracking using a Whoop band, which I love, I started to see that, you know, I was just fooling myself. My body definitely was in not the best shape. So the past 4 to 6 months, I've focused more on my sleep. And I love the Whoop band because it kind of puts you into either a red category where, you know, your recovery isn't good, or yellow, which is kind of like, it's okay, or green where you've had a great sleep. And I love being able to see that. So I try to get in the green as much as possible. And generally speaking, I do a pretty good job. So I don't think sleep is something that I have naturally struggled with. But I do have to be careful. Like, I can't drink caffeine before I go to bed or I'll be up forever. And there are some times where that, you know, it can kind of build up, right? And also in this article, I was interested, there's a related article that says short daytime naps don't relieve sleep deprivation. So we can't nap our way out of this crisis.
Yeah. Well, and it also says that you can also sleep too much as well, and that there's some problems with that, not necessarily cognitive problems, but it just from a functioning perspective as well. So it is trying to find that sweet spot. And also what is difficult, I think, for a lot of people, and then this is speaking for myself, is getting uninterrupted sleep. So obviously I would prefer if I was able to get uninterrupted sleep, but unfortunately it takes me far longer to get enough sleep in bursts. So I might wake up at least 5 or 6 times minimum in the time frame that I need to actually sleep and rest and get my body restored. So and I don't think I've fallen asleep naturally. I've needed assistance with medicine for at least the last 6 or 7 years, I'd like to say. And then I haven't actually slept properly since I moved to Canada, so 11 years ago. And so I think also that for me at least too, it's also the environment. And it was that shift in my environment and obviously the weather and everything else, it's very different. And so I think you take all of those things for granted. And, you know, I try and do the same things as everyone else has said, go to bed at a regular time. I don't use a device. I do all those things. I don't have caffeine in the afternoon, but it's quite troublesome. I think the longest period I get in sleep is probably 3 hours max. And that is, you know, with taking a pill.
Yeah, that's, I mean, and you know what, it's amazing how that can cause problems long term, right? I think that's really what I gathered from the article, is that you may be able to survive in your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, but when you get in, you know, to those older years, there can be major issues that can arise because of that. So I think it's honestly just something that we all need to be more aware of. And also, I think, Aaron, I know we only have a minute left, but we have really had this hustle culture, right, over the past year or so, where people, not year or so, even longer than that, where people are like, okay,
at least 5 years.
As much as you can. Yeah, you're right. It's been a bit longer. Is that, do you think that has added to this crisis that we're in with sleep?
I think it's added to it. I think also the work from home shift that we have in large parts of the Western world during COVID-19, depending how much that's a factor where you live right now, where you're listening to this right now. There's no separation between work hours and home hours, no separation between work rooms and home rooms. So I know a lot of people that are taking long lunches, long dinners, and going back to work from 7 to 9 p.m. and sitting in front of the computer and pounding and crunching numbers and Excel sheets. And I know when I have to do that, and sometimes I have to, it certainly interrupts my sleep, because you need a longer decompression time in the evening before you go to bed.
Yeah, it's a really, really fair point. I think, and statistically, we know people are working longer hours. So another big issue that exists out there. Let us know what you think. Are you sleep deprived? Do you get enough sleep? How do you focus on sleep? It's super easy to find us online at Amber Mac and at Ben Bancroft 80. And please use the hashtag The Feed.
This is The Feed with Amber Mac and Michael B on SiriusXM Canada Talks, Channel 167.